Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, and a very happy new year. I'm happy to begin 2014 with an interview with one of the great luminaries of nutritional science. He and I go way back. I hate to say how far back, but he is known to you as the author of Enter the Zone. In the 1990s, he revolutionized our understanding of omega-3 fatty acids and the importance of dietary modification for enhancing health. He, of course, is none other than Dr. Barry Sears. Dr. Sears is author of the Zone books. There are 13 books that he's now written, and his books have sold more than 6 million copies. It includes, of course, the New York Times number one bestseller, Enter the Zone. It topped the charts for a long time. And he is one of the leading authorities on anti-inflammatory nutrition. It's a revolutionary concept, and we're going to delve into it because he's going to share with us some data on his latest study, which has to do with a big problem, age-related macular degeneration. So without further ado, here's our guest, Dr. Barry Sears. Barry, it's a pleasure having you on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Well, Ron, thank you for the opportunity.
Indeed, we do go way back because I'm very proud to say that very early on, when the Zone diet was just being popularized, we had some very lively interchanges on my radio show, Health Talk. And you, in fact, were a guest at the WOR Expo. I recall that very well because it was a sensation. We packed a large hall, and people were really impressed with your cutting-edge research on what was then a revolutionary topic, anti-inflammatory nutrition.
Well, again, it was cutting-edge then. Actually, it's still cutting-edge now, and that's why the really exciting part, especially about nutrition, is that it's constantly evolving and constantly changing.
Indeed it is. And, okay, so your latest research, and by the way, you now spearhead something called the IRF, the Inflammation Foundation. So if you go to drsears.com, you'll get information about that. Tell us about that initiative.
Well, one of the problems we have with nutrition is that it really gets no respect. And, you know, the U.S. government does an excellent job of funding basic biological research. But it doesn't do a very good job of funding applied biological research, especially when it comes to nutritional agents. So what I set out to do is set my own nonprofit foundation to do the funding of the initial research that the government would not do, and to demonstrate, yes, there is great potential if you use nutrients at the right concentration to have significant effects in some of our most chronic diseases that really have no treatment in today's medicine.
And so as a case in point, you have turned your attention to something called AMD, age-related macular degeneration, big problem. Can you define the scope of that problem?
Well, the scope is pretty massive in that it is the primary cause of blindness after age 50. And there is no known medical treatment that can reverse it. Yes, you can take some drugs to slow down the progress, but eventually you'll go blind. You can take some nutrients, carotenoids, to slow down the progress, but eventually you will go blind. So if you get this disease, which can affect about 2 million people in America, that your future is quite bleak. And in this kind of void we stepped into, because in many ways, ocular diseases like age-related macular degeneration are simply, in many ways, neurological diseases. The eye is actually a portal into the brain. And if you can reduce the inflammation in the eye, especially the retina, it says you have probably a pretty good chance of reducing inflammation throughout all the brain. And the great fear of aging we have is the brain giving out before the body does. And that includes also the eyes.
Right, so and I presume that some of your research is also directed towards prevention of cognitive decline. That would be part of the initiative of the Inflammation Foundation, because we now, many people have come to realize that Alzheimer's disease and dementia are inflammatory disorders.
Well, they are. In fact, this goes back to almost the old saying of all roads lead back to Rome. Well, virtually all roads of chronic disease lead back to inflammation. Whatever chronic disease you're talking about, it could be diabetes, it could be heart disease, it could be cancer, it could be neurological disorders, it could be ocular disorders. They all lead back to inflammation. And if you have an agent, or basically an intervention, that can reduce inflammation to keep it under control, you in many ways have cut the Gordian knot of chronic disease in the 21st century.
And clearly, you know, that's what the zone concept is all about. So let's focus in on the latest research. You actually administered fish oil, fairly high doses, to a group of study patients.
Right. Actually, we did this work, actually, of all places, Cyprus, because nobody in the United States wanted to touch it. And for the feeling, they said, well, if you gave all this fish oil, the patients would bleed to death. I said, they're not going to bleed to death, and the reason I can make that statement is because we had developed a blood test that could measure the levels of fatty acids, and we could keep them in a zone, not too high where they're basically causing inflammation, but not too low that you might have potential bleeding problems. So it gave us now an ideal way to basically fine-tune the amount of fish oil a patient needed to basically start the healing process of reducing the inflammation. Now, it turns out we were not the only people to think that omega-3 fatty acids might be useful, but the doses they were giving in the past, in fact, two articles were published this year that demonstrated or said omega-3 fatty acids are worthless. They're useless. They do nothing.
And those are the articles, by the way, that got a lot of attention and headlines, right?
Well, exactly. Very easy headlines because I told you so. Forget going to the health food store.
Yeah.
But again, it's like using a drug. If you use a placebo level of a drug, you get placebo effects. The same is true of nutrients. You use a placebo level of nutrients, you will get placebo effects. So we basically took the aspect that to get an effect, we'll have to give a therapeutic dosage of omega-3 fatty acids. And we already had a pretty good idea what that dosage would be from our previous studies in terms of treating severe brain trauma and also other conditions like ADHD. So we started out basically taking patients a wide number of disease states. We focused on AMD because it's the most obvious, but virtually every ocular disease we looked at had the same results, that we would give them very high levels of omega-3 fatty acids of approximately 5 to 10 grams a day of these. And you're dealing with patients whose vision will not improve. They can only basically deteriorate. And what we saw within a matter of months of significant improvement. The nice thing about vision, there's no hand waving. It's not saying I'm using surrogate markers. It's saying, you know, can you see or not see? It's like going to the DMV, saying, can you see the line? Yes or no?
Right. It's easy to monitor. There's no like subjective aspect to it, or you know, and it doesn't take that long to see a benefit. Within a few years, you can see.
Well, in this case, it's a few months.
Oh wow! Okay.
And in a condition like age-related macular degeneration, since there's no known medical treatment, and you're guaranteed to go blind, let's say that 10% of the patients would improve. That would be a major medical breakthrough. If you could get 25% of the patients to improve, you might be considered for a Nobel Prize. Our problem was we got 100% of the patients improving.
That's too good to be true. I think they probably would discount that.
I presented the data at a very major medical conference in San Juan, Puerto Rico in September, and the only question I had from the audience, if the data is too good to be true.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Yeah.
What can I say?
Yeah.
But again, it indicates that if you basically are able to quell inflammation, then these otherwise intractable diseases become under greater control. And so we have an opportunity here to basically take a disease, blindness, and basically of, you know, not only basically slow it in the progress, but actually reverse it.
Okay. And when you say enormously high doses, I mean, you didn't use that term, but you said high doses of omega-3 fatty acids. Some people conjure up the image of taking 25 fish oil pills a day, something that would be, you know, a clear impossibility. How many pills did people take, and do they take, was it a special supplement, like a very concentrated supplement? Is this something that is achievable in the context of, buying normal fish oil pills, and could most people tolerate that amount?
Well, the ones you find in the health food store, probably not.
Okay.
You're right. If you had to take capsules, mm-hmm. Number of capsules would be simply too much. You'd be taking probably 15 to 20 capsules per day. No one's going to take that amount.
Right, especially the discount brands that aren't very potent, and, they're mostly ineffective neutral oils.
Well, just buyer beware, actually. But we had a special high potency, high purity material in a liquid format.
Okay.
And so we're using a very high-tech delivery system. It's called a tablespoon.
Okay.
You put a tablespoon of the fish oil into your mouth and swallow.
Okay.
And that's it.
That's once a day?
Once a day.
Okay, so you didn't have to, drink from a gallon jug or something like that and then put a clothespin around your nose and cork in your mouth and, deal with noxious fishy smells for hours and contain your nausea. This is very feasible.
Very feasible. And what we did, because we already had a lot of data published in the literature saying that at this level of omega-3 fatty acids, there is no side effects.
Okay.
Published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition a few years ago. But again, just to be on the safe side, we measured the blood of all the patients just to make sure that their levels of these fatty acids were not increasing too much, that there might be some outside possibility of bleeding.
Okay. And that is a concern because in certain patients who have macular degeneration, they have fragile blood vessels, and sometimes they can get retinal bleeding, and that can actually be an ophthalmological emergency. Then you need laser surgery to tamp off the bleeding. You didn't see that happen with this high dose?
No, just the contrary. In fact, that's why I like working with eyes. You can actually see into the retina and basically see it healing with time.
Okay.
You don't have that. You don't have the luxury of going to the brain or going to the heart.
Yeah. Right.
And so what we could see that a significant you could see the proliferation of the retina vessels actually decreasing. This is another mm-hmm. major problem in diabetic retinopathy,
right?
Where basically the blood vessels begin to explode and basically blind the eye.
Mm-hmm.
In that, we also see significant reversals of the retinopathy in just basically a matter of months. But again, you're quite right. This is why you want to basically pull out every punch you can possibly think of mm-hmm. on a safe meet so that the question say, what did you do to protect the patients? Everything known to medical science besides looking at the eyeball.
And okay, so now some supplements offer differing ratios of EPA to DHA. I know we're getting a little technical and wonky here, but did you find that one or the other of those, or that a certain ratio of those was most beneficial? Do you believe that nowadays you can go in different manufacturers and they advertise high DHA or high EPA formulations? Does it seem to matter?
Well, it does, because in the brain, if you look in the brain, you find very little levels of the omega-3 fatty acid EPA. And that is what a lot of research to believe that EPA doesn't get in the brain. Well, it turns out that's not true. EPA gets in the brain just like DHA. But unlike DHA, which is basically stored as long-term storage in the membranes, it's deeply oxidized. So it turns out that the EPA is far more anti-inflammatory than is the DHA.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you had to give very high levels of the fish oil rich in EPA to maintain high levels of that fatty acid in the blood to get enough into the brain to reduce the inflammation in the retina.
So some vegetarian formulas that feature DHA, mostly from algae, they probably wouldn't work for this.
They would not work whatsoever. And that's why one of the early studies published this year using very high dose DHA was a complete failure.
Oh, interesting. Now, this is not to say, and you've studied this, DHA is not without benefits to the retina.
No,
because
on the contrary,
we know that
DHA does very different things than EPA. That's why you need them both.
Uh-huh.
And that's why in this particular study, we did a 2-to-1 ratio of EPA to DHA. They both do different things. They both work in complement, but you need them both. But in terms of you're trying to reduce inflammation in the eye, then you really want to have more EPA than DHA, but it's not just the ratio, it's the absolute amounts.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key.
Okay. And now, did you bother to distinguish between the two major forms of, three forms of macular degeneration? There's the so-called dry kind, and then there's the wet kind, and then there's the diabetic proliferative kind. I guess that's a third kind. Did it seem to matter what type of macular degeneration your patients had?
No.
That's the amazing part, yeah.
In that you correctly pointed out, there are three different types of macular degeneration. They're all bad. The dry type accounts for 90% of macular degeneration.
Right, that's the ordinary garden variety age-related macular degeneration that
right.
happens to, especially for some reason, it happens especially in Caucasian women. It's very, very likely to occur at an earlier age with greater frequency in that group.
There is some genetic components that basically give rise to that.
Mm-hmm.
In the wet macular degeneration, which comprises only 10%, we do have certain drugs. They're very expensive.
Yeah, and they have to be injected into the eyeball. That's not too appetizing.
On a monthly basis.
Yikes.
Whoa, this is really great stuff.
Yeah.
But in those patients who had the wet macular degeneration, we could see improvement and reduce their injections to zero.
Whoa, that's amazing.
And then we go to the third type of the diabetic macular degeneration. Again, we are seeing significant improvements. Three different disease states, but a common etiology. They all deal with inflammation of the retina.
That's very, very, very exciting indeed. I read, to change the subject slightly, I read this year of research that showed that in a condition that is just a horrible, horrible condition, I dealt with it very frequently during my medical residency training because I trained in an inner city area where there were a lot of African Americans. It's sickle cell anemia. It's a terrible, terrible condition. It causes excruciating pain. Many patients are ultimately addicted to painkillers. Sickle cell anemia, that the use of omega-3 fatty acids can be very beneficial here, too. Are you familiar with some of that research?
Oh, yeah, and I've been following this in that area for a number of years because what you're looking at sickle cell anemia, which is really a protective disease, surprisingly, particularly if you're trying to protect yourself against them, malaria, but it becomes, now a very significant disabling disease if you're not exposed to malaria all the time. But what you have with the sickle cells, they get deformed. What the omega-3 fatty acids happen is they basically increase their levels in the red blood cell. They give rise to greater flexibility. So now basically the sickle cells are not quite as rigid, and therefore they can now flow through the capillary beds more effectively and decrease the very significant pain you've already described.
In effect, it gives a lube job to the red blood cells.
That's exactly what's happening.
Wow. What other impressive, other than some of the research you personally conducted, what are some of the other exciting new developments on the omega-3 front that you've seen in the past couple of years?
Well, I think one of the more interesting things, and this came out again this year, has been basically the more omega-3 fatty acids you take, the longer you extend the telomeres at the end of your DNA. Now, why is this important? Because the length of those telomeres tell you really how long you're going to live. Each time the DNA turns over in a cell cycle, the telomere at the end of the DNA and the 2009 Nobel Prize in Medicine was awarded for this research, it gets shorter and shorter and shorter, and eventually, if it gets short enough, your DNA doesn't turn over anymore. It turns out if you take adequate levels of omega-3 fatty acids, and what's adequate levels? About 2.5 grams a day, you see a significant elongation of the telomeres of the DNA.
Wow.
That means one thing. You're going to live longer. And this year, Harvard Medical School had a study that demonstrate the higher the levels of omega-3 fatty acids in your blood, the longer you live. And how much longer? About an additional 3 years and longer.
And you'll be able to see as well.
See, and more importantly, think.
Yes,
because,
yes.
Because, again, of you know the biggest fear we have of a society right now is a growing scepter of a tsunami of Alzheimer's. Every major disease, cancer, heart disease, stroke, their death rates have been going down in the last decade, except Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's has actually increased. The death rate from Alzheimer's has increased by some 68%. Now, Alzheimer's doesn't happen overnight. Think of this like a champagne fountain. As all diseases, these all start with inflammation. But the first step of inflammation is you gain weight. Weight gain, obesity, is not a disease of lack of willpower. It's a disease of inflammation, but inflammation in your fat cells. So that takes time to build up that fountain, then spills over into the next fountain, which is called diabetes, which has also been exploding. But it takes about a 15 to 20-year period from one epidemic to go to the next. Our rates of obesity started to explode around 1978. It was only about 1995 that the rates of diabetes started to escalate. And what if we add, let's say, 15 years, let's call it 20 years, to 1995? That brings us to the year 2015, which we can start to see an explosion, I believe, of diabetes.
Yes, which it's like an incoming tsunami, and it's really going to affect the country.
This will destroy our country. Yet we have all these diseases, whether it be obesity, diabetes, or Alzheimer's, they have a common etiology, increased inflammation. And you have a very powerful tool, that is omega-3 fatty acids, and especially put in the context of an anti-inflammatory diet that can bring these to a lower level that they basically don't impede upon our future health.
Well, you know, you, like an Old Testament prophet, you've been warning about this since, I believe it was the 1980s that you began formulating this, and you popularized it in the 1990s. How do you think that the zone concept has weathered the test of time? I would say very, very well, because now, you were kind of a voice in the wilderness. Now I think a lot of people have come around to your point of view about the right type of diet, the balance between, the various macronutrients, the carbohydrates and the fats and the proteins and the benefits of omega-3s.
Well, you're right. I'm quite right. I'm very, very gratified. But this kind of goes back to a quote that Arthur Schopenhauer made about 150 years ago when he said all truth goes through three phases. The first phase is ridicule. And when I first came up with this idea back in the 80s when I was at MIT, I went from being boy genius in drug delivery to boy charlatan in a six-month period of time. It was a very frightening downward slope.
Well, and in effect, you were literally purveying snake oil. Because we know that snake oil is rich in omega-3 fatty acids.
A piranha.
Right.
And so then when the zone came out, it went from basically ridicule to violent reaction. How dare you say that, eating a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet is contrary to basically good nutrition? I said, easy. The facts are the facts. And now today, it's become self-evident. But the reason it's self-evident is because of the research. It's the research, take any type of dietary approach and put it into a crucible to be analyzed. And that's why the zone, when you look at it and basically do it under very carefully controlled conditions, this is when you treat humans like lab rats. You make all their meals for them. You don't let them think. Under those conditions, in every published study, the zone has been found to be superior to all of the diet approaches, but most importantly, superior in reducing inflammation. And that to me is my greatest, contribution of making that first initial linkage between diet and inflammation and what the implications are for the future of practice of medicine.
Well, you've done a great job in articulating the message in a way that's easily understandable. I think that that's really been the source of your genius. Is that, the concepts can be a little wonky and technical, but I think you've put it into a form that is easily digestible and understandable.
And the whole secret is just make it, again, easy for the person to comply. The best dietary approach is worthless unless it's easy for the patient to comply with it on a lifetime basis. And that's why we go back to the word diet. It comes from the Greek root, which means way of life. And when we talk about the zone diet, it's really a way of life to control inflammation for a lifetime.
So why don't we just take a moment and review the basic tenets of the zone diet? I mean, of course, people can go to your website, zonediet.com, and learn more. There's lots of details there. It's a very, very useful resource. But why don't you just outline it?
Well, again, the concept of the zone goes about really a drug background. Well, again, when you talk about a therapeutic zone for a drug, if you give too little drug, it doesn't work. You give too much of the drug, it's toxic. You try to keep a drug in a therapeutic zone. The concept of the zone is saying the same approach of thinking, but now applied to the hormones induced by the food we eat. You try to keep them in that same therapeutic zone. And if you're able to do that, the payoff is you're able to control inflammation. Okay, it sounds, all high-tech. How do you do it? You need three things. You need one hand, one eye, and one watch. And here's all the rules you need to control inflammation for a life. At each meal, divide your plate into three equal sections. On one-third of the plate, you put some low-fat protein, things like chicken or fish. And how much? The amount you can put on the palm of your hand. Not very much. Now, what about the other two-thirds of the plate? You fill it full of colorful carbohydrates. They're called fruits and vegetables. Why are they colorful? They contain chemicals called polyphenols, which if you eat in high enough concentrations, as they do in the Mediterranean diet, they have significant anti-inflammatory effects. And finally, you add a dash. What's a dash? A small amount of fat. Just make sure the fat is very low in saturated fat and omega-6 fats. What's a good fat? How about extra virgin olive oil? And now, why do you need the watch? If you balance that meal correctly, for the next 5 hours, you will stabilize blood sugar levels, you won't be hungry, and you will peak mental acuity. So your challenge is to basically try to get that same balance from meal to meal the best you can for the rest of your life. And then basically you're in the zone. But the zone is not some magical place. It's a place where we can now quantify by certain parameters you can take to Harvard Medical School, and they will agree with you. One of the parameters is the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids in the blood. That's really one of the primary markers of the levels of inflammation. Another marker are the levels of what are called glycosylated hemoglobin. That's your marker for long-term glycemic control. And the last marker is the ratio of triglycerides to HDL cholesterol. That's really a good marker for insulin resistance. And if you're really in the zone, then all three of those markers are aligned where they should be. Now, that being the case, how many people in America are probably in the zone? Probably about 1%. And this explains why our healthcare costs
right.
are going out of control.
Well, it also explains the entire basis for the pharmaceutical industry in America.
Well, and the pharmaceutical industry has a role and a place. But what we've done, we've abdicated our responsibility for health to Merck, Sharp, and Dohme. And reality, the practice of medicine in the 21st century will go back to where it was 2,500 years ago, or has to, when Hippocrates said, let food be your medicine, let medicine be your food. Now what he's really talking about is how food can affect inflammation. I really call it diet-induced inflammation. If you can control that, you've controlled basically your future, your genetic future. And that's what we have to go back to in terms of medicine, basically putting food first and foremost and using drugs as a backup to treat any remaining symptoms of chronic disease that we can't basically treat by controlling the inflammation induced by the food we eat.
Well, I have to agree that if the vast majority of people adhered to the guidelines that you set forth in the Zone books, that we would conquer many of the degenerative diseases that now sap our vitality and threaten our very economy. Lots more information on this subject at zonediet.com. Plus, heads up on some of the products that deliver the benefits, such as EPA and DHA rich forms of fish oil. I'm tempted to ask you, Barry, about some of the studies that recently, in the past year, have maligned fish oil. There were lurid headlines earlier this year that fish oil increased the risk of prostate cancer in men. That scared a lot of my patients and listeners. We had to do a lot of damage control on that subject. Finally, the furor seemed to have died down. But what's your take on that study?
Well, the study was probably one of the worst studies I ever saw in my life.
Yep, I would
agree. And I've seen a lot of bad studies. In fact, it wasn't a fish oil study in the first place. What they had done, they had taken blood samples from another study that had been sitting in a freezer for 8 years. Then they pulled the blood samples out, and they looked for the levels of omega-3 fatty acids in different groups of people. Those who had prostate cancer, low levels, malignant levels. And if you looked at them and knew anything about omega-3 fatty acids, they were all exactly the same, all with an experimental error. And yet they said, well, we see a difference here, and that's going to say this proves that omega-3 fatty acid supplements causes prostate cancer. I said, wait a minute, go back to the original study. In the study, the people were basically told not to take any supplements of any kind during the study. Two, the levels of omega-3 fatty acids in their blood were pathetically low. Three, the studies have shown that people who eat the highest levels of omega-3 fatty acids, the Japanese, have 20 times lower rates of prostate cancer. If eating omega-3 fatty acids or taking them was inducing prostate cancer, the Japanese should basically be all in cemeteries today.
Right.
And the fourth aspect, which was kind of lost in this, Harvard Medical School had published a study earlier, but basically did not hire a PR agent to push it, that said, yes, the higher the levels of omega-3 fatty acids in the blood, the lower the likelihood of getting prostate cancer. Somehow that study did not get any of hype in the media, though it came to just the opposite conclusion. So what you have is a really disturbing trend in science, in that everybody wants their 15 minutes of fame. If your data is not very good, just scream louder, and you'll get your 15 minutes of fame. But what happens to the consumer out there, they get totally confused.
Yeah.
They basically say, well, I read about it on the Internet, saying, do you believe everything on the Internet? Yes, I do, saying, we've got a problem. And we also have a problem with medical journalism. They really basically have missed the boat. You know, they don't go into detail, they don't do their due diligence, and they report back to their readership saying, this proves, and say, wait a minute, do you know how to read a paper? You know how to understand statistics? It proved nothing. It proved basically bad research can get published.
Yeah, it's clearly science by press release.
It is, and it's a really disturbing feature, because what we have now, it's indication of our society. Everybody is now a journalist. Everybody is now a nutritional expert. Because why? I write a blog. Therefore, I am. And as a consequence, we have more confusion ever in our society as really what is good nutrition and basically how to use that to protect our health. The one thing money can't buy is really our health. And the most important factor that will protect that is our ability to use nutrition wisely to maintain our health. And that's eroding before our very eyes. So we have a real problem that is emerging, that people who basically are knowledgeable in the crowd, because they don't have the good PR to basically try to say, I approve that basically the world is flat. Think you got to be kidding. But then you are like a retraction in New York Times. It's on page 7. Say,
right.
The story we said the Russian Empire is reassembled. Thing, a mistake on our parts.
Right.
Forget about it.
Yeah, or it puts you in the position of claiming repeatedly, contrary to the rumors, I do not beat my wife.
Exactly.
And if you repeat that...
And so you're guilty till proven innocent, but you can't be proven innocent because, you know, somebody... And this is, you know, you see this constantly through what are called meta-analysis. This is probably the worst thing that's ever happened to medicine. If you can't do a good study, you take a lot of bad studies and put them together and make an analysis. Well, what happens if you're a gourmet chef and you pull things out of the refrigerator that have been there for 6 months? You're going to make a gourmet meal? Highly unlikely. And so you have a lot of these meta-analyses showing up, which come to opposite conclusions that that anybody in the field says, how did they come up with that mindset? But this is your right. It's saying, when did you stop beating your wife? It's a difficult situation because nutrients are probably one of the strongest tools we have, our diet, to basically protect our national security. It's not just basically our healthcare crisis. Saying pretty soon we're all going to be sucked into a black hole economically, because again the state of the American health is basically on a downward spiral. And there was actually an article in the 2003 New England Journal of Medicine that predicted that every child born after the year 2000, one in three will become diabetic. And if one in three become diabetic and they're developing diabetes at an earlier rate, then you're more likely to see a great number of those children also become demented. And this is something we have no defense against.
Right. Also, I think they've been pointing out a disturbing trend, which is that in every previous generation, we've seen an extension of lifespan. We've seen, life was, the expression life was short and brutal. We managed to conquer infectious diseases, and we're making tremendous medical advances. But it may well be that the current generation has the longest lifespan in human history, because we're creating artificial diseases that may curtail our longevity, and that subsequent generations, our children, our grandchildren, on average, may expire before we do.
Well, and that was the conclusion of that article in the New England Journal of Medicine, that the children born after the year 2000 may be the first generation in American history to live a shorter life than their parents.
Yeah, scary stuff. To turn to more upbeat subjects, one of the things that you place a lot of emphasis on is essential fatty acid testing. Do you believe that that should be incorporated as part of, we check for cholesterol, we check for blood pressure, we check people for diabetes. Do you think that that would be a major benefit if we screen people for their omega-3 fatty acid levels?
No question about that. Because if you, in my opinion, if you took only one blood test in your entire life, that you had to basically choose what your future is, it'd be the ratio of fatty acids in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ratio of those fatty acids will tell you the levels of inflammation in your body. And you want to correct that. Now, we do have data. There's enough data out there now that we know that the average ratio of these two fatty acids that drive and control inflammation, one is called arachidonic acid, it's an omega-6 fatty acid, causes all the bad things to happen, and the other fatty acid is called EPA, the fatty acid that actually is anti-inflammatory. So the balance of those two fatty acids in the blood give you a pretty good indication of the balance of those two fatty acids in every one of your 10 trillion cells. If you have a high ratio, it means you're on fire. It means your fat's on fire, your brain's on fire, your immune system's on fire, your pancreas is on fire, your heart's on fire, and basically bad things are going to happen. If the ratio is low, it says you've got inflammation under control. Now, let's look at heart disease. It turns out the Japanese and Americans have virtually identical rates LDL cholesterol, the bad cholesterol. How come the Japanese have 7 times fewer deaths from heart disease than Americans do? It can't be because of the bad cholesterol. They're exactly the same levels.
And also, additionally, that from what I see of Japanese businessmen hanging out in New York City, they smoke a lot. And so it's probably not about, that they're very abstemious about cigarettes.
No, and if you go to Japan, they smoke even more.
Yeah.
But if you look at the blood levels of these omega-3 fatty acids, the Japanese, the levels of Americans, that ratio of arachidonic acid to EPA, is 7 times higher than it is in Japan. And now we look at the Japanese. These are the people who have the longest longevity in the world today. More importantly, they had the longest health span. That is longevity minus years of disability. They also had the lowest rates of heart disease and the lowest rates of depression. So again, from at least an initial standpoint, it would seem as you reduce the levels of arachidonic acid to EPA, you're going to live longer. Now let's take another group who are more similar to Caucasians, the people in the Mediterranean region. Their levels of arachidonic acid EPA is midway between the Japanese and Americans. And we hear a lot about the Mediterranean diet. But the Mediterranean diet is one that basically keeps inflammation under control. So we have a very, very good epidemiological basis, and we have a tremendous amount of intervention studies that say if you lower that ratio of those fatty acids, there is no disease state that does not improve.
Well, you know, it's of interest that the study that you performed, you know, you looked for a place to perform your study. You couldn't perform in the United States because they said, what are you, nuts? You can't give people so much fish oil. So you found your way to Cyprus. Last time I checked, Cyprus is located in the Mediterranean, so these people were on some form of Mediterranean diet, unless it's possible that junk food has made its inroads into Cyprus. And yet additional amounts of omega-3 fatty acids have a therapeutic effect in people with disease in those parts of the world.
Well, exactly, and you even see this in Japan. If you give them extra omega-3 fatty acids, even though their levels are low, they get better too. So it's a universal aspect, and we go back to the saying, all roads lead to inflammation. If you can reduce inflammation and have a way of quantifying it, you know you basically are on the road to wellness. And that's why I go back to saying if I had to take only one blood test my entire life, it would be the ratio of these fatty acids, because it gives me a clear marker of how well my diet is keeping inflammation under control. I'm not going to live forever, but you want to live as long as possible with the best quality of life.
Well, I must congratulate you on, a wonderful career of bringing this information to the fore, and you're still active as evinced by your commitment to performing high-quality studies such as the macular degeneration study, and that was undertaken at your own initiative. You didn't get government funding. It wasn't funded by a major pharmaceutical company, so kudos to you. And what are some action points for our listeners if they want to get more information?
Well, I think the first thing, as a good resource, is to just go to zonediet.com. A lot of good information there, and it's all free. My books have been out there, and, I haven't changed my story in the last 10 years.
That's your story, and you're sticking to it.
It's saying it's not that hard. If you have one hand, one eye, and one watch, you can follow the Zone Diet. How long will it take you to see the effects? Really, within a week, you'll see a dramatic improvement of your quality of life. If you like it, do it the Zone Diet for another week. If you like it still, do it for a lifetime. It's not that difficult. It just requires commitment. And commitment is really based on belief. If you believe inflammation is the underlying cause of chronic disease, then following an anti-inflammatory diet is your best drug prevent chronic disease.
Okay, and that really sums it up. So thank you very much, Dr. Barry Sears, for joining us and helping us to get off to a great new beginning in 2014. A lot of people making their New Year's resolutions, and I think you've really set the tone for a lot of improvement and good health in the coming year. The website's drsears.com, also zonediet.com. Tremendous amount of useful information. Congratulations on the amazing results of your macular degeneration study.
Well, Ron, thank you very much. I'm very most appreciative to hear those words.
Indeed. Have a very happy new year, Barry.
Take care now.
You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce, and so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or, alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening, and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine podcasts.